This is Walter Yarbrough interviewing Mrs. Piney Yarbrough at Washington Elementary School on March 31st, 1995. The subject of this interview is segregation during the 1950s and 60s. Mrs. Yarbrough, I would like to thank you for consenting to this interview. Why don't we start with you telling me about yourself?
I'm a mother. I have two children. I have been married for almost 30 years, will be 30 years on the 12th of June. I have been in education for 29 years. I taught school for 12 years. I was a resource teacher for 2 years, and I have been a principal now for 13 years. I started in a small elementary school with about, started my principalship in a small elementary school with about 160 kids, and now I have almost 700 children with an elementary and a middle school that are housed in one building. So I pretty much enjoy what I do, and I enjoy taking care of my husband and taking care of my two children.
Okay, that's good. Well, let's start the interview by asking you, what part of the state were you from?
I was born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. I've spent all of my life here, except for a few vacations in the Midwest. But basically, I've spent all of my life in Birmingham.
Okay, what part of Birmingham are you from?
I came from a little community that was called Hudson City when I was coming up, and I guess as early as I can remember back is probably about 1950, and that was the community then was called, I said it was called Hudson City, and I said that because now it is called Inglenook, and the name of the community has changed since we have undergone integration.
Okay, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have four brothers, and I have one sister. My sister is the oldest, and I'm the youngest. So there are four boys that are between the two girls. And I had one brother that died after when he was 2 years old. So he was about 4 years older than I was.
Okay. How much education did your parents have?
Both my mother and father had very limited educations. I think they may have finished third or fourth grade. They were born in Lowndes County, which is right outside of Montgomery, close to Prattville, and they did sharecropping. And my mother married my father when she was, she told us, 16 when she was when we were younger, but then she finally told us that she was 14, almost 15, when she married my father. And she married them. She married him so that they could get away from the country. She didn't want to be a part of it. She said she hated farming. She hated the hard work. And so they married and moved to Tarrant, Alabama, which is just on the outskirts of Birmingham. So a lot of my life, my early life, was spent going between Hudson City and Tarrant City.
Okay. Well, in your community, could you explain the racial makeup and the occupations and, like, the recreation of the neighborhood?
As I said, the name of the community was Hudson City. And Hudson City was surrounded at that point in time by whites. And whites lived in Inglenook, and blacks lived in Hudson City. There was only one way in and one way out. It was a very small community. Most of the people were people that had done, like my parents, that had come from the rural areas of the state of Alabama. And they had come into Birmingham to try to find jobs and to make life better for themselves. And the industry at that time was the Alabama byproduct and Stockham Bells and Fitting. Those were the places where the men basically worked. The women did not work. They had limited education, so they mostly were homemakers. You asked me something about the makeup of the
book. Right, but the racial makeup?
It was 100% black.
Okay. How did you feel about the civil rights movement?
I think my first impression with civil rights period was in 1954, and I was in elementary school, and I had no earthly idea as to what civil rights or segregation or integration, any of those terms meant. I was 10 years old, and I could just remember my elementary school principal saying that by next year you are going to be going to the school down under the hill, which was Inglenook School, and which was the white school in terms of what we knew and what we believed. So I didn't have a clue, but as I grew older, I understood that that was the Brown versus Topeka decision, where the schools had been desegregated according to the Supreme Court. But that was my first inkling as to what the civil rights movement, or what integration or segregation or any of those things meant. And then still at that time I was too young to really understand what it meant, but that was my first dealings with it. And to me at that point it was so foreign, because I could not fathom going to that school, because heck, we didn't even get a chance to leave from off of the hill, less more than to walk down by the school, because you knew the white school, because you knew that it was there, but you knew that it was not a place for you.
Okay. Well, how do you feel segregation affected the black community and you as a black woman?
That's a good question. When you are born into something, then you have no clue as to what has gone on or what is in the outside world. So as a young child, like I just stated, as a young child, I had no clue, because I was happy and I was satisfied in the environment in which I grew up. My parents were supportive. My sisters and brothers were supportive. I had lots of friends, and we played, and we just had fun. We had a good time. I left elementary school and started Parker High School in 1958 or 59. Parker High School was the largest black high school in the city of Birmingham. There were, I guess maybe 1,500 students that graduated with me in 1961 in a January class. So to me, going to Parker was the most wonderful thing that could have ever happened to me. Yes, I passed by Phillips High School, and I knew that Phillips High School was there, and I knew that Phillips High School was a white high school. But in terms of wanting to go there or having any desire to go there, no, I had none. So at that point in time in my life, from 54, and this was, I guess, until 61 when I graduated from Parker High School, I had no desire to do anything other than what I was doing, and that was to finish my elementary school and finish Parker High School, because that was the thing that you did, and that was important to me. Now, in terms of what I learned beyond that point, when the civil rights movement did begin, and it did begin shortly after that, about 60 to 63, things had begun to change. Things had begun to develop. People had begun to test the waters. And I used Phillips High School, because Phillips High School was not very far from Parker. It's almost within walking distance, I guess probably about 20 blocks, and I had no idea at that time that it was that close. But as a teenager, when they did begin all of these things, and by the time we were getting involved with segregation, understanding the need for integration, I was in college. And so I could relate to wanting more and understanding that there was a difference between what was going on at Parker High School and what was going on at Phillips. And I was at that point then where I realized that all of the textbooks and all of the furniture that came to Parker, those things were rejects from Phillips. So I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that when I was a student at Parker. But after I had begun to learn that and after I had begun to understand that, then, oh, yes, it made a difference. I finished Parker in 1961, and I attended Knoxville College in Knoxville, Tennessee. And at that time, the people in Tennessee, I think, were a little bit further along the movement than we were in Birmingham, because at that time, we were picketing the only little theater we had in Knoxville at that time for admission, because we were not admitted as college students at that theater. So I had begun to get a taste of what it meant to be in a segregated environment by 1961. And by the time I got to 62, 63, oh, yes, I understood what integration was, and I wanted it.
Okay. At the particular time, how did you feel about Martin Luther King?
Martin Luther King was an entity. I can remember the bus boycott in Montgomery and how that affected us. And I can remember Dr. King and his leadership within the city of Birmingham. He was so dynamic. He was such a leader. He was so charismatic. It was like being caught up in a rapture of knowing that there were things that were better and that these things were things that were yours, and they were yours by your birthright, even though you had not thought of it. And I so often think about Rosa Parks and that lady getting on that bus and sitting down, and at that time of day she had no idea, no conception, no concern about changing the fate of the South. It was the farthest thing away from her mind. She was tired and her feet hurt, and she saw a seat and she sat. And I could relate to how she felt, because I was leaving Parker High School and I was riding the bus home in the afternoons after choir rehearsal, and I left Miles College and I rode a bus home in the afternoons, and a lot of afternoons I was tired. And I just wanted to sit, and I resented seeing that, colored, please do not remove board, white, please do not remove board. So I could understand how that woman felt when she got on that bus that day, and she was just doggone tired, and she sat down and said, this is it, I am not moving. So Dr. King was one that was just so dynamic. Even there were other leaders like Reverend Shuttlesworth and Reverend Abernathy and all of those people that were involved within the movement. But he was just so charismatic. It's just no other way of describing him.